The Haines Assembly adds its support to a power rate increase settlement. And salmon experts speak out against Canadian copper mines. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friednauer. Those stories and more up next. Haines Mayor Jan Hill had to break a tie vote Wednesday evening to lend the borough's approval to a settlement with Alaska Power Company that will raise power rates to consumers by 11%. For the Haines Borough, that means an increase of roughly $7,000 annually in its electric costs. But we'll get to that part of the story in a moment. The settlement was forged between the power company and the state attorney general after the utility earlier this year requested the Regulatory Commission of Alaska approve an 18% rate increase. A few communities like Haines, Skagway, and Craig joined the case, meaning they were allowed to have attorneys represent them in the proceedings. However, any rate increase has a wider reach to more than a dozen interior communities near Tok and communities on Prince of Wales Island. The RCA was set to decide the rate increase in December, but a few weeks ago it was announced a settlement for an 11% rate increase was reached. The communities who are parties in the case are required to approve that settlement before it can be finalized. Skagway, Craig, Thorn Bay, and Kaufman Cove all approved the settlement, and Haines followed suit Wednesday night. The vote was split with Assemblymembers Joanne Waterman, Ron Jackson, and Dave Barry opposing it. But the Assembly did not discuss the motion or resolution in public. Borough Manager Dave Sosa provided a press release after the meeting. He said it provided information the borough attorney approved could be released to the public. In the press release, Sosa writes that approving a settlement is preferable to allowing the RCA to decide the final rate because of the testimony taken in the case from seven people. Some of those witnesses are APC company executives who detail why a rate increase is necessary. Those reasons include increased costs for infrastructure and administration, and APC has not had a rate increase since 2010. Some of those witnesses were testifying on behalf of the Attorney General, who represents the ratepayers. One of those witnesses recommended a lower rate increase in the 5% range. Another witness evaluated financial documents from the power company and made several recommendations. But Sosa writes in the press release that the conflicting testimony from all the witnesses would have to be considered by the RCA if it decided the case. He also wrote that the settlement eliminates the risk that the RCA could impose an even higher rate increase. The Assembly met in executive session for about an hour about the settlement. The Skagway Assembly had done the same at its meeting last week, but neither Assembly made comments in public about their decision. The RCA still has to approve the settlement. Usually that is just a technicality in a case where a settlement has been reached. But the RCA might take a harder look at this particular case because at least one ratepayer is opposing the settlement. That's former Haines Mayor Stephanie Scott. She was mayor when the Haines Borough decided to become a party in the case. She provided public comment on behalf of the borough at a hearing in April before the RCA. At Wednesday's meeting, she told the Assembly she was disappointed it was engaging in private discussion about a settlement and not explaining why it benefited ratepayers to agree to a settlement as high as 11%.
So I do hope that if you agree to a settlement in excess of 5.1% or 6%, that you are able to explain why you are making that decision in light of the AG's expert witness, Mr. Smith's recommendation. So that would be very important for me to understand in order to feel supportive of your action.
Scott reaffirmed her opposition Thursday in a letter to the Assembly and Mayor, asking again for justification of why a settlement was agreed to. Other communities voiced opposition to a rate increase at the public meeting in April. There, residents of Tok spoke about their high costs of power, and some residents say despite taking steps to save energy, their electric costs are higher than their mortgage. Others said a rate increase would close businesses in Tok. Several residents asked why the state encouraged energy-saving measures if saving energy just encouraged utilities to ask for rate hikes to offset a decline in demand. The RCA earlier this year approved an interim rate increase of 6% while the case goes through its process. So, electric bills have already seen an increase in the last year. If the settlement is approved, another 5% increase will appear on electric bills. And that's not an increase of the entire amount of the bill. Only two line items will be affected. Those are the electric rate and the customer charge. Like we mentioned at the beginning of the story, we looked at what the settlement will mean to the Haynesboro. Looking through the 35 separate electric bills the borough receives monthly, we calculated the borough paid about $13,400 in power costs in the September billing cycle. The settlement would add another $603 to that total. On a home electric bill in the $50 range, about another $2 will be added to the bill, on top of the interim increase already in effect. The official settlement was filed with the RCA late Thursday, and we've posted a link to that document on our website with this story. The Haynes School Board held a workshop about the district's homeschool program Wednesday night. They decided to write up official homeschool policies and look at systems that might dissuade people from choosing the school district for homeschooling. Right now, there are at least 28 Haynes homeschoolers enrolled in outside programs like Raven and IDEA. There are 13 homeschoolers enrolled in the school district. The school board wants to increase that number. The district designated teacher Lisa Andreessen to work as a sort of liaison for the homeschool families. Cindy Buxton, one of the two homeschool parents at the workshop, said she would like Andreessen to have open office hours for parents like her. Andreessen said she would set that up. The school board talked about possibly changing the district's extracurricular policy. Right now, they require students to take 7 credits in order to participate in extracurriculars. That's more than the statewide requirement of 5 credits. School board members worry that might be a disincentive for families to enroll in the district homeschool program. The school board also plans to look at the district's graduation and field trip policies. Those are two areas where some homeschool families have felt excluded. The school board is going to wait to review whether more or less staffing is needed for homeschool. Right now, Andreessen and Principal Cheryl Stickler share homeschool program responsibilities, but both have said they are crunched for time because of their regular teacher and principal duties. A coalition is speaking out on proposed copper mines in British Columbia and what they say could potentially hurt salmon runs for people on both sides of the border. Angela Denning reports.
Salmon navigate through their noses, and that sense of smell could be in jeopardy if proposed mines are developed in British Columbia, according to Sarah O'Neill, a fisheries biologist.
That's what they use to find predators and prey and mates, and also to find their way back to the receiving stream where they were born. So that's how they know how to get back to spawn, is by smelling.
O'Neill is working with the campaign Salmon Beyond Borders, which is trying to raise public awareness about the potential impacts of proposed mines in BC. She says it doesn't take much contact with copper for salmon to be affected.
Experiments have shown that salmon's ability to smell can be impacted at just 2 to 10 parts per billion of copper. So that equates to like 2 to 10 drops of water in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. So minuscule amounts.
O'Neill says those amounts are within water quality standards and can be legally discharged. And as the amount of copper increases, the effect on salmon does too.
They can impair their brain function. They can impair their ability to make the transition from saltwater to freshwater. You know, all different aspects which can ultimately impact their overall survival.
Salmon Beyond Borders has been touring around Southeast Alaska. The group is a coalition funded through different sources, including Trout Unlimited and the True North Foundation.
A big part of this campaign is not against mining. It is speaking for the salmon, essentially.
Jill Weitz is the Southeast Outreach Coordinator for Trout Unlimited, and she's working on the Salmon Beyond Borders campaign. They also work with conservation groups, the United Tribal Transboundary Mining Working Group, and they've worked with the Tall Tan First Nations, which has been blocking the Red Chris mine in BC. The group wants input in the BC permitting process for proposed mines. 3 of the proposed mines are in 3 main watersheds shared with Alaska, the Taku, Stikine, and Unik Rivers.
We're trying to look at this as a mining district. It's incredible how many projects are being proposed right now. There's over a dozen large-scale mines that are in different stages of permitting and development.
I think the real issue is, how do folks in the U.S. address issues in Canada that could impact them? And there's no mechanism in place right now to do that.
Dr. David Chambers is a geophysicist and former mine engineer. He's now with the Centers for Science and Public Participation and is working with Salmon Beyond Borders. He uses the proposed KSM mine as an example of why they have concerns.
The water treatment plants that they plan to employ there will not discharge water at water quality standards. It will still be contaminated above, you know, in excess of those standards. And that contamination will actually reach down into the Yunuk River itself. They plan on treating something like 20 billion or 21 billion gallons of water a year. And that water treatment is going to have to go on in perpetuity.
Besides the idea of treating the mine's water forever, Chambers has issues with the cost. He crunched numbers and says that developers would need $1 billion in a trust fund to come up with enough interest to pay for that kind of water treatment. British Columbia leaders maintain that mines on transboundary rivers will not damage salmon. The country's top mining official, Bill Bennett, was in Alaska recently and said that they would listen to Alaskans' concerns. But Salmon Beyond Borders is skeptical that they will. The group is looking to the public to help continue what it calls momentum in getting a voice in the permitting process. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friednauer. We had reports from Emily Files and Angela Denning. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.